Oh, welcome to another edition of Through Science to Health with yours truly, Chris Bricker and Lynn Sorensen, RN, retired longtime community member of Port Townsend and an advocate for public health awareness and promotion. Lynn is a member of KPTZ's Virus Watch and Emergency Response Team, and on alternate Fridays at 12 p.m., we bring you a discussion and updates surrounding the pandemic and review some of the insights and journey of discovery surrounding COVID-19. Lynn Sorensen, welcome once again to Science Through Health.
Hi, Chris. Good to be here.
Well, likewise, good to be here with you. Well, lots happening. I think what we'll do is that we're kind of trying to follow our general format. I want to give you a little bit of give our listeners a little bit of a rundown about what's happening this week in the state and nationally. A little bit of a recap, not a complete one, with the help of course, our wonderful newspaper in Seattle. In our own Washington, following guidelines, more than a dozen movie theaters in the Seattle area are reopening this Friday at 25% capacity. University of Washington is still having problems on Greek Row, where more than 200 infections have been confirmed. The state confirmed 1,740 new COVID-19 cases since October 9th and 21 deaths, and 676 new COVID-19 cases since October 14th and 11 new deaths. That brings the state's totals, at least as of yesterday or so, to 96,185 cases and 2,232 deaths. And the Department of Health has reported that 7,956 people have been hospitalized with 73 new infections since Wednesday.
We're going the wrong direction, Chris.
I know. Well, trying to keep a lid on it, aren't we? Statewide, 2,169,192 tests have been administered as of Wednesday night. And in King County, the state's most populous in our beloved state, 24,297 diagnoses and 788 deaths. Nationally, coronavirus infections are real, but reinfections are real, but very, very rare. There's some continuing discussion about that, about the isolated cases that have been happening with some of the reinfected individuals and their medical backgrounds, their virus load, and all kinds of things. Just half of Americans would agree to be vaccinated. This is an interesting poll. If a free approved vaccine were available now, according to recent polling anyway, because of the politicization, confidence in safety and efficacy would be a significant hurdle to achieving herd immunity to the point that the virus cannot readily spread. This is important because of some of the uninformed and in some cases ignorant remarks on behalf of our supreme leader. And I say that because it's true. And it's very, very important for the public to be informed accurately. Maverick scientists who call for allowing the coronavirus to spread freely at, quote, natural rates, unquote, among healthy young people while keeping most aspects of the economy up and running have found an audience in the White House and at least on one state capitol. Wisconsin has hit a pair of grim milestones, 3,279 confirmed new cases and 34 reported deaths, and a sweet 16 party at a swanky inn in Long Island in September left 37 people infected and forced over 270 folks to quarantine. Globally, and this is just a snippet, Britain's daily number has more than tripled, with 17,234 further cases confirmed Tuesday across all age groups and regions. And governments across Europe are ratcheting up restrictions in an effort to contain the spread, as the continent recorded its highest weekly number of new infections since the start of the pandemic. And Iran is having some pretty severe problems, a new surge of coronavirus infections that's filling hospitals and cemeteries alike. So we're not out of the woods yet, Lynn. And locally, we've had some our wonderful Department of Health briefings that happened with Dr. Locke, and I know you are privy to those. And maybe you could sort of give us a sample of some of the questions that are asked at those briefings, at least were asked at those briefings this week, and maybe some of the answers that came from Dr. Locke.
Sure. Again, these updates happen on KPTZ at 9:45 in the morning by Dr. Locke, and it's a briefing to the Board of County Commissioners. But it's a good thing to listen to on a weekly basis to kind of see where the Jefferson County is. I think we're up to 80 positive cases now. And so that is a little increase again. And they were supposing that most of those were infected outside of the county, or someone outside of the county came to Jefferson County and were infected that way. So again, it's still out there, but we're doing quite well. Some of the questions were about what do they have for protocol for the kids that now are in school. And I think those that testing protocol, we may be hearing some new information on that coming up, because he did say that there was new protocol coming. But as it stands, as of this last Monday, if someone, a kid gets sick at school with COVID-like symptoms, they go home and get tested, and then they can go back to school 24 hours after the symptom resolution has happened. But if they're not tested, they are treated as if it was a positive, and so they would be kept at home and isolated, and those around them would have to quarantine for the 14 days. There was also something coming up later this, or would have been probably on Thursday, the Board of Health was meeting and discussing the Phase 3 application that Jefferson County submitted to the state, I think the same day as we were shut down by the governor all around the state. And so there may be something new coming out of the Board of Health that Dr. Locke will cover on Monday. We have now have COVID testing available in the South County clinic in Quilcene, and that's available by appointment. And also we are encouraging everyone 6 months of age and older to get their flu shot this year. And if we're lucky, there won't be much of a flu season, because as found in the Southern Hemisphere, when they had their winter during our summer, they had I think it was 99% decrease in their usual flu season, because people are socially distancing, wearing masks, and doing their hand washing to prevent coronavirus from spreading. This also helps with the flu virus as well as even common cold viruses. And it's important for those, again, getting those flu shots, so that that can be something that we won't have to go in for further testing. I mean, we'll know. Well, I'm getting confused here. It's just important to have that under your belt, and because the testing capabilities locally could be overwhelmed if, for every cold, for every flu symptom, we have to be tested for, so to rule out the coronavirus. Some of the differences between getting COVID versus flu is that 5 out of every 1,000 who are infected with the coronavirus can die, versus with influenza, it's one out of every 1,000 statistically could die. So it's definitely, you know, five times the chance of a fatality if you contract the coronavirus. Let's see. We're still doing well, and Dr. Locke is very commends the county for being as, you know, just wearing their masks, doing their things to keep our numbers down. And one thing he was asked about was face shields. And there's some kind of new face shield out there. I don't think that I've seen it in town, but it's called a humanity shield that has kind of a collar around it, plus the face, probably a plexiglass of some kind. And it's been okayed by L&I for employees to wear it. But it's still, he says, it's not as good as a face mask. And but definitely plain face shields should not be used. What else do we have? He was also, Dr. Locke was also interviewed on a very interesting Compass this past week by the news director at KPTZ, Steve Evans. And that plays on Saturdays at noon, Monday at noon, and also 5 p.m. on Mondays. And you can also get it on the website at KPTZ. But, again, it was very interesting, lots more information. He talked about the super spreader event at the White House and how they were using the rapid COVID coronavirus testing to screen people as they came into that. And he says that is not the way that this test works. It is something that's to be used only if you have symptoms. And so it gives people a false negative that they're fine, and then they go about their usual getting close to people and hugging and handshaking. So he said that was a very poor example of how better to do it. And also, we were talking about, let's see, what do I want here? I'm looking at all these notes I've made, that, you know, getting the actual COVID disease is such a more serious condition. They have these, what they're calling long-termers, which have persistent symptoms for months afterwards. And we still don't know how much possible disability they may have, but some of the primary organs, the lung damage, scarring in the lungs become less, more elastic. I mean, less elastic, therefore it's harder to breathe. And heart and kidney and liver, and I think I'm talking over my time, so we should talk about something else.
Well, I just a thought occurred to me, well, a couple of things. Number one, maybe subject for discussion another time would be, and as research continues, but the idea of reinfection and what kind of effect that has, and whether or not the virus load is large enough in certain individuals to be contagious, even if they are reinfected. There's just all kinds of things to be talked about and all kinds of things to be discovered. And that leads me to something that I'd like to pass along to folks. Number one, the briefing is available at KPTZ Live at 9:45 every Monday. So I want our listeners to be aware of that in case you aren't. And then also in the National Institutes for Health, in the news, the latest newsletter, there's a great article on discoveries in basic science. How does basic science work? And why does science take so long? And it's the whole really interesting description of the scientific process. And those of you out there that have kids, you might want to take a look at that because it might be an interesting thing to discuss with them in sort of your home schooling or your at-home schooling information that you might want to pass along to your kids. Also, the efficacy of wearing masks is kind of, you know, the whole idea that the flu contagion is suppressed that much really speaks to the efficacy of wearing masks, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, even the CDC director came out and said the mask may be more important than a vaccine. And from what I hear is, you know, the vaccine is going to take a long time once they are authorized just to be distributed, and probably the more people at risk will be the ones that will be getting their that vaccine. And I heard this morning, I think it was through WHO, the World Health Organization, that it could be in 2022 before actually younger people are going to be able to get the vaccine, because the elderly and the compromised with medical conditions will be the ones that will be getting the vaccine. And it will take some time to get that manufacturing up and the distribution to happen.
Well, and then, you know, Trump continues to spew out misinformation at his rallies and wherever he has the opportunity to do so. And it's unfortunate because the efficacy of wearing a mask, as primitive as it may seem to some people, is what we have as the bridge to being able to get a vaccine and keeping people, keeping the infection rate reasonably low. You've been doing some reading. You ran across an interesting article. We have a couple of minutes to at least reference that and talk about it a little bit, Lynn.
This is in the Washington Post as of the 14th of October. As regarding herd immunity, or as Dr. Locke likes to say, community immunity. But in any case, this is something that's being rolled out by the current administration, and there was a letter posted earlier this month by a think tank, a libertarian think tank, in Barrington, Massachusetts. So this is called the Great Barrington Declaration, proposing that, you know, just let the virus run free, let the younger people get it, and they won't be that sick, and then we can get what's called herd immunity, where we'll have enough protected people through getting the disease that the rest of us will be safe. Well, that will not fly because younger people could get very ill as well, but those younger people live and operate around older people. So it's not a good thing to advocate, but Trump is advocating it because it's simpler than creating a vaccine and distributing it. So that's my take on that. And if you want to find it, it's in the Washington Post on the 14th of October. And the White House is calling it focused protection. But these are people that generally oppose mask mandates, contact tracing, or other measures to slow the spread of the virus, because they imagine that the infection can be confined to this low-risk population.
Well, another thing we may want to be talking about a little bit later on is vaccine contracts and the administration's approach to that during Operation Warp Speed. Warp Speed, unfortunately for the administration, sometimes means expediency to get things out to a third party and do some price gouging. So we're hoping that we can explore that a little bit more at a later time. Lynn Sorensen, time goes fast. So
it does.
Until 2 weeks from now, through Science to Health, thank you so much, Lynn Sorensen.
Okay.
And
get your flu shot, people.
Right, yeah, get your flu shot. All right, until next time, through Science to Health.
Okay, bye-bye.